Thank you. Okay. Welcome to the Sunday night. There is a solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website, oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After this share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Pam SR, from compulsive overeater from Texas.
Oh, oops. Pam, 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 Pam. I'm going to make a co-host. Hi, Pam. You should be able to
Okay.
unmute. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Thank you so much, Jessica. Okay. Yeah, hi. I am my name is Pam and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm always grateful to be able to share what God has done in my life, which is really pretty miraculous. I am a recovered compulsive overeater. All that means is that I am a compulsive overeater, but I no longer suffer the consequences of compulsive overeating. And I haven't found it necessary to hurt myself with food in 5 years. And so that's pretty miraculous for me. Yeah, and so we're all here in a compulsive overeating room, but as it turns out, food wasn't my problem. Food was my solution. And what it was a solution to was the insane bondage of me struggling with life for 6 decades. I just couldn't figure it out. Yes, I do have an allergy of the body. And what that means is there are specific alcoholic ingredients of foods that I absolutely cannot eat. And when I do ingest them, my brain just lights up like a Christmas tree. And those foods trigger the phenomenon of craving, and I just lose control. And once I start, I cannot stop eating them. Just like an alcoholic refrains from drinking alcohol, the same thing is true with certain ingredients. I just get a compulsion that I have to have more. And so I have to abstain from those alcoholic ingredients 100% of the time. I have not had them in over 5 years. And with a food plan that helped me, I became abstinent. Well, the best way to describe the phenomenon of craving is that my first bite asks for the second bite. My second bite requires the third bite. And my third bite demands the fourth bite. And then I am going to consume whatever the container is, no matter how large it is. But even though all of that is true, if that's the only thing that I had, well, then a diet would work for me. And diets don't work. Tried them for 40 years. They absolutely do not work. And that's because the main part of my problem centers in my mind. I put the food down, and my brain and my thoughts get very loud. And that's why it is just absolutely impossible for me to keep the food down. Because abstinence addresses the allergy of my body. But it's the 12 steps that address my mental obsession, which to me is just insanity. I have a brain that convinces me that I can go back to the very thing that made my life miserable. Well, the thing about my brain is I don't just have this section of my brain that obsessively, compulsively thinks about food. I just have a brain that is mentally, obsessively compulsive about thinking. So what happens is I get abstinent and my brain just starts spiraling out of control. It gets more chaotic, not less chaotic. So the very thing I want is abstinence, but I put the food down and my brain gets worse. I'm not just a little bit baffled by life, I'm even more baffled by life, and life is even more overwhelming. So what I'm really needing is what is defined on pages 25 and 27. It talks about that I need a vital, effective, revolutionary, dramatic spiritual experience that is going to completely alter my internal sense of being, my perspective on myself, my perspective on life, and my perspective on God's creation. So, what does life look like today? Well, today I have food neutrality. I'm no longer fighting the food. But what's more important than that? Oh, sure, I wanted to lose weight when I came in here. Well, that's great. But what's even better than that is my brain has moved from being overwhelmed, from being mentally obsessed about thinking about everything, to actually comprehending the word serenity and knowing peace. And so was my behavior with food irrational? Oh, absolutely. Because food was my solution to my insane thinking. Food numbed me, it blotted out the consciousness of my intolerable thought life. In step two, it says, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Well, if sanity is freedom and happiness, then I not only needed freedom from food, I needed freedom from my brain binging and obsessively thinking. And mine was the insanity of being stuck in the grief of wanting a different past. I was stuck in the if-onlys. If only things had been different. If only I had made a different choice. If only 30 years ago, 5 years ago, last week, if only I had made a different decision. And it was the delusion of wanting a different past. And when I'm struggling against life, I'm in bondage to self-pity, and I'm of no use to anyone because, it's not that I think too much of myself. It's not that I think too little of myself. It's just that I think about myself. And really, I'm in bondage to how I feel. So, what's my solution? Well, the solution is a higher power. I call my higher power God. It's just convenient. It's very hard for me to switch gears in my 60s. But a power greater than myself to restore me to sanity, because what I desperately needed was I needed this higher power to do for me what I could not do for myself. I've never been, more than about 50 pounds overweight. When you're short, 50 pounds is quite a bit. There are no pictures I have to share with you because nobody was allowed to take my picture. But really, weight didn't matter as much as the obsession with the food did. Food owned me. It's the first thing I thought of in the morning. How can I get it? How can I eat it? And how can I get more? And even if I wasn't eating, even if I was living in the don't eat it, don't eat it, don't eat it, the white knuckling, nobody wants to be around you because you're not a very nice person. Even when I was living with that, I was obsessed with my body. Was I fat or was I not fat? Did my clothes fit or did they not fit? Standing in front of the mirror, pinching different parts of my body, trying to measure, was there more fat there today than there was, 10 minutes ago? It was just trying to control what completely felt out of control. And so, well, what did my insane life look like? Well, I've got hundreds of insane stories with food. I have decades of bizarre food behavior, but there's one that stands out. I'm sorry, those of you who are in the rooms that have heard this story before, but it's the biggest focal point in my hall of shame. And it's the story of the wedding cake. My relationship with my daughter was so strained that when she got married, she did not speak to me at her wedding. And the only way that I knew how to deal with that was I brought the wedding cake home with me. And every morning I'd get up and I'd start eating wedding cake. And I ate until I was sick. And being a failure at bulimia, I just would go back to bed and wait for the food to digest. And then I'd get back up and I'd start eating wedding cake all over again. And I did this over and over and over again for 10 days. Well, what was also going on during those 10 days is my oldest son would call me every morning. He'd wanted to be a police officer since he was 4 years old, went to college kicking and screaming. And just before my daughter's wedding, he had finished his training and he was on his own working the night shift. And his voice would wake me up every morning from my food coma, and I would hear, "Hey, Mom, I just got off shift and I wanted to tell you all about it." And at the age of 22, with loads of friends, that young man could call anybody on the planet, and he chose to call me. And I didn't pick up because I was face down in the food, and that phone call would wake me up, and I would get back up and I would start binging on wedding cake. And 10 days later, my son was dead. He had leukemia. He didn't know it. We didn't know it. There was a cancer 95% curable, as long as it doesn't present in the brain. And his did. And his brain hemorrhaged, and he just dropped dead. Well, if I didn't know how to handle my daughter not speaking to me at her wedding, I had no idea how to deal with the sudden tragic death of my son. And so I ate for years. And I completely evaporated from my younger two sons' lives. And so at ages 14 and 15, they had no parental guidance. And their lives completely derailed. And they are now in their early 30s, and they are still trying to get their lives back on track. You talk about living if the in the if-onlys. Because food had been my solution, and I blotted out the intolerable situation, and I just ate into complete oblivion and isolation. So I can tell you from personal experience that self-pity is a downward spiral. It feeds on isolation, and isolation feeds on self-pity. And I think what the interesting thing about the word self-pity is, the definition of self-pity is excessive sadness. And what happened inside my brain is that I got stuck. And I believe that's what happens with self-pity, is I have this disproportionate reaction to how I feel about something. And I get excessively, disproportionately sad. And that self-pity has a gravitational pull, a tractor beam that locks in on me, and I end up in the quicksand of the bitter morass of self-pity. And it's just this vortex that it's like a toilet bowl. And it's just this spiral that goes round and round, and it just keeps going down. And so I share that with you because I want to not only identify in as a compulsive overeater, I identify in with grief. I identify in with getting stuck. I identify in with self-pity. And so if you put yourself in my shoes, I mean, just think about it. The last times my son, I have a chance to talk to my son on this planet, I am face down in the food. So when I got into these rooms and there was this promise on the wall, oh my God, you will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. And I was like, I have absolutely no idea if this will work for me. I don't believe it. But what I do believe is I believed that there were people in that room who were sharing that God had done something for them that they absolutely could not do for themselves, and that their lives were different now, that they acted like the way I acted with food, but they didn't live that way anymore. And they were crazy inside of their heads with obsessive compulsive thinking, but they didn't live that way anymore. And so what I thought was, oh, if I do what they did, the worst thing that can happen is I just end up with what I have now, which is nothing. Because what I wanted was, I didn't just want freedom from the bondage of food. I wanted freedom from the bondage of thinking. I wanted freedom from the bondage of ruminating. The torturous looping narratives that ran round and round inside of my head, because my brain, when I put the food down and I stopped binging on food, then my brain is just binging on thinking. So I started working the steps like my hair was on fire, and I clearly remember where I was standing in the house. So I got abstinent, and my brain just got really loud. And I remember where I was standing in the house when I clearly heard inside of my head, and the reason that I knew it was God was because it was a sane and rational voice. It was the sound of my voice, but I knew it wasn't mine because it was sane and it was rational. And I clearly heard, Pam, I don't just want you to surrender your food. I want you to surrender your thought life. And that was really shocking to me because I felt that it was invasive. You know, it really almost felt violating. Who am I without my thoughts? And I understand now that what God was asking me to surrender was the damaging stories of the dishonesty. You know, resentment for me had to get to be this incredibly large tent. And what I did is I put, because resentment means to re-feel. And that's what I was doing, was I was re-feeling over and over and over again. And so I just kind of put into this resentment tent anything that was other than happy, joyous, and free, nourishing to my soul, was peaceful and serene. Anything other than that, it went into the camp of refeeling. It went into the camp of resentment. And the dishonesty are the damaging stories, the dishonest stories that I tell myself as to what do things mean. And mainly for me, it was just a whole buttload of shame, guilt, and self-loathing. You know, and in 40 years of compulsive overeating, that had never gotten me anywhere. My feelings, following my feelings, never got me anywhere. You know, the voices of saying I wasn't enough, the voices that drove me to perfectionism and procrastination. So I kind of what I did is I got abstinent from food and I got abstinent from my thinking. Because what I want to share in the I think I have just under 10 minutes left. I want to talk about the dilemma. So in the book, it is constantly putting in front of us two choices, two choices, two choices, two alternatives. And it is always telling us we're at this fork in the road, we're at a turning point. That's the crux of the problem. If you think about a crux, it's like the branch of a tree. You got the trunk coming up, and then you got it splits off, and there's two branches. That's the crux of the problem. And so it's what's that fork in the road is what I believe is the dilemma. And so what is a dilemma? Well, it's interesting that a dilemma is a choice between two things that are equally undesirable. So if you think about that, it says we have the two, we have one of two alternatives to go on until the bitter end, which is staying in the food, or we can pick up the spiritual toolkit. We can be sitting here and looking at each other, and it's like, well, that's a no-brainer. I want the spiritual toolkit. Well, if that is so easy, then why is it we can't stay stopped? And for me, what it came down to is, well, I can go on till the bitter end, continuing to eat. Well, that's an undesirable solution. Why is it that God is an undesirable solution? And what it is when I'm caught up all in my head in regret of the past, or in fear of the future, the bottom line is underneath. So I got my resentments, the things I keep feeling over and over and over. And what fuels that is my dishonesty of saying, this is what it means to me. And underneath that is the fear. It sounds different for each one of us. Fear of not being enough, fear of being abandoned, fear of not being special, fear of suffering. But the bottom line of all of it is, I'm just fearful that God isn't going to show up. And so when I look at picking up this spiritual toolkit, I have to be honest and admit that spiritual toolkit is very uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to work the 12 steps without the food because I'm going to go through this period of I'm giving up my best friend. I'm giving up what numbed me out. The voices are much louder inside of my head. And I'm trusting this God that, in all honesty, I don't feel like he's going to show up. And so what ends up happening is, I end up opting for the familiar problem rather than the unfamiliar solution. Because the unfamiliar solution is to trust God. Because I gotta be honest with you, when I got abstinent and I was working those 12 steps, and I was like, no, I don't believe God's gonna show up. I don't believe this is gonna work for me. I believe it worked for you. Is that what it was like for me? It was like hanging on to the edge of a cliff, and my fingernails were ripping out one by one. And so when we get to that crossroads of that dilemma, two undesirable choices, I can tell you that the only thing that I can encourage you about is if I go into the bitter end with food, that is long-term, lifelong suffering. And the unfamiliar solution, the uncomfortable, the complete unknown of trusting God, getting a sponsor, getting abstinent, doing what I'm told, not believing that it's going to work for me. That's suffering, but it is short-term suffering because what I am fully convinced in my mind for you, for anybody out there who is still suffering in the food, is that I believe beyond a shadow of a doubt that God is going to show up for you because he showed up for me. And if he showed up for me, he will definitely show up for you. I didn't get any crescendos in the third step. I didn't get any crescendos in the fifth step. I didn't get any crescendos anywhere, and I had my nose to the grindstone, and I just kept plugging away. You're talking 6 months. What I did get was I got food neutrality, and that was very helpful because I was no longer fighting the food. Okay, that was good. And I remember I had a particularly rough day, and I was upstairs, curled up in a fetal position on the floor. And I was like, God, is this? And I was even sponsoring because I was told that's what you have to do, that's where the medicine is. And I remember very, very clearly. I said, God, is this working or am I just blowing smoke up my ass? And I, once again, just like I had periodically off and on through those 6 months, I heard this still quiet voice say, are your relationships different than they were 6 months ago? And I said, yes. And then it was, are you experiencing more peace and serenity than you had 6 months ago? And the answer was yes. And the last question was, are you experiencing miracles in your life? And unequivocally, the answer was yes. And that same quiet voice says, well, okay. Then let's get up off of the floor and go do another 30 days. And that's the way I've lived for the past 5 years. My relationship with all of my children has been restored. A daughter who wouldn't speak to me at her wedding, she invites me to come and live at her house for anywhere from, gosh, I've lived there for up to 4 months. And so anyway, I could go on and on about all of the incredible things that God has done in my life. But yeah, if it can happen for me, it can happen for you too. And so thank you so much for inviting me to share. It's always an honor and a privilege.